I have a question for you this morning. Who calls you the most often? Recently, I have a new candidate who's calling me the most often. And maybe think about the category that you have of people who call you. I'm about ready to show you my caller ID. I took a picture when I was getting called this week by the person who's calling me about most often lately. Caleb, will you show the slide? I don't know if you can see it, but this is a person named Scam Likely. Does anybody else know Scam? Scam Likely calls quite a bit these days. I have a feeling he's been sending lots of emails too, and a few texts and a Facebook friend request or two. But does it seem to you like there are a lot of scams out there? Does anybody? How many of you have been victimized by a scam? Okay, well, not that many, it looks like. I have. I'm one of the dupes who's been before. But anyway, Revelation, we're going to get into Revelation, and we're going to talk a little bit about this idea, maybe where scams come from and what we can do about it. And as we get into it today, in honor of a holiday that's coming up very soon, I am going to read a passage from Revelation 12, 1, 2, and 5. All right. A great sign appeared in heaven. A woman was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who will rule the nations with an iron scepter. Now, did you know there was a nativity in Revelation? Usually when we do nativities for Christmas, we focus on Matthew or Luke's nativity, and they have nice scenes. And I was thinking about my nativity set, because we probably a lot of us have nativity sets, and ours is pretty interesting. Our nativity has the usual classic characters. You know, there's baby Jesus in the manger, there's Joseph and Mary, there's some animals, there's wise men and shepherds and some angels. But then we have a few other characters in there. Ours are even named. I've taken a picture. There's another slide of the boxes, but we have one named Rachel. Rachel is carrying a fruit basket. I don't know if this is supposed to be Rachel from Genesis. Then next to Rachel, we have Miriam. Perhaps that's Moses' sister. I don't know, but she's carrying a sheep, and Moses was a shepherd for a while, so maybe that's, I don't know. So it's still biblical. And then we have one named Reuben, another name from Genesis. And if you can't see him, he looks like a hobo from the 1930s in America. So we have the 1930s American hobo Reuben in there too. And then the last one that's up there is not an Old Testament name. He has a New Testament name, Thomas. But Thomas looks like a blonde Aladdin. And any blonde Aladdin should be at the nativity set, right? Well, reading from Revelation's nativity, I think that there's another biblical character that we could include here. So yeah, let's go ahead. Revelation 12, 3 and 4. So this is the part we skipped over. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on its head. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth so that it might devour her child the moment he was born. Anybody have the red, giant, red, 7-headed dragon in their nativity scene? Okay, don't worry. In November or in December, you know, we're going to do Christmas in December and Silent Night and traditional. But it's Christmas in October today. And I think for Christmas for October, we have a giant red dragon with 7 heads. Does that sound okay? All right. Well, we're going to go with that. After and this, as you know, the Christmas story and the nativity story, so after the baby is born, he's able to escape. The dragon doesn't devour him. He's able to get away, and the mom's able to get away. But in Revelation, what happens next is that there's a war that breaks out. There's a war in heaven, and the war is Michael and his angels, not Michael Skirvin, although he'd be pretty fierce, I bet, but an angel named Mark, against Satan, the dragon, and his angels. And so there's this war, and this is what happens at the end of that war, Revelation 12, 9. Now, again, keep in mind here, this is apocalyptic literature, so the images that we have are really vivid and imaginative as we're thinking about what that might look like, just as the nativity scene is pretty disturbing in its rendition of it. This is what it says about the great dragon, what happens. 12:9. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth and his angels with him. Now Jesus, in his ministry in the Gospel of John, he called Satan, the devil, the father of lies. And here that's kind of similar, who leads the whole world astray. So I was thinking, maybe what I can do is add scam likely to my contacts and give them a picture. Yeah, there. What do you think? Because behind the lies, behind scam likely, the father of lies, where lie comes from, where deception comes from, is according to Revelation and Jesus, the devil. There's a lot of names there too. Satan, the serpent. The serpent kind of reminds us of Genesis and Adam and Eve in the garden. But the serpent, if Satan were to go trick-or-treating in our neighborhood and you were to see him, what do you think he would dress up as? Because I'm thinking he probably wouldn't dress up as the giant red seven-headed dragon. But the Apostle Paul talks about Satan masquerading too. So I think instead of, we'll go ahead and read it. This is from 2 Corinthians 11:14. Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. So that kind of indicates that maybe if he were out trick-or-treating, he would be dressed not as one of the monsters or something scary, but maybe as one of the nice ones. Because that's the indication that we have here, the appearance of Satan, that he's a masquerader. He appears good. So we're going to look now, next, back to Revelation and what Satan does. This is from Revelation 12:10-17. So this is his role. Now keep in mind, what has Satan just done? He's just been a dragon who's about ready to devour a child. But it calls him, "For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, who accuses them before our God day and night." So he's the one who's about ready to murder a child, and yet he's the one who's accusing. Maybe there's something in the nature of evil, too, where that does that. So a lot of times evil will point the finger at somebody else. But he's an accuser. And then it, skipping a few verses and talking about what the dragon, what Satan does, it says, "Then the dragon was enraged at the woman and went off to wage war against the rest of her offspring, those who keep God's commands and hold fast to their testimony about Jesus." So here we go. Satan, the devourer, is also the accuser. Satan's pointing Satan's finger at others and trying to accuse. And it says that he does that day and night before God. In the Hebrew scriptures, we have this image in Job where Satan is behind all that mayhem to you there with Job, but he's going, and it starts with Satan accusing and saying, the only reason why Job hasn't turned against you is because he's got an easy life. So Satan, one of his big roles, accusing people. There's this scene in The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, where the good wizard Gandalf is talking to a king who had been enslaved, basically, in his mind to the evil one. And his name's Theoden. So they're having this conversation, and Theoden does not want to go into war against the forces of evil. And Theoden says to Gandalf, he's saying, "We got to get the soldiers ready. We got to get prepared for battle." And Theoden says, "I will not risk open war." And Gandalf replies, "Open war is upon you, whether you risk it or not." In other words, even though you don't want there to be a war, it's coming to you, whether you want that to be the case or not. Now, as people here, and if you're here and you're not a Christian, we want to say thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you being here and listening and all that. But for those of us who are Christians, too, we follow the Prince of Peace. We want to live at peace with all people. We don't want there to be war. But according to Revelation, war is upon us. whether we would risk it or not, that there is something going on. There's something sinister out there. Jesus' really close disciple, Peter, said it like this in 1 Peter 5:8. Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Now, it's interesting here that Peter's advice here is not to be afraid, is it? He doesn't say, be afraid of the enemy. He doesn't say, be scared, live in terror. He says, be alert. Be of sober mind. In the 1980s, there was a singer who did some music that had Christian music. And he had this song, From the Perspective of the Devil. This guy's name is Keith Green. It was, No One Believes in Me Anymore. And it was about how the devil didn't want anyone to believe in him anymore. And that kind of thinking fits to you with C.S. Lewis and the Screwtape Letters, is the goal of the demons isn't to turn people into Satanists. That's just crazy. But they're more are happy if they're not even, if no one's aware of their presence. It's more of about deceit than it is fear. Satan's sort of like a hunter. Sorry, Brandon. Hunters aren't bad. Just to be clear here, I'm not criticizing hunting, Alec. There's no problems here. But Satan is more like a hunter. Hunters don't want to be feared. They want to be unnoticed. And that's kind of with Satan. Satan doesn't necessarily want to be feared. He wants to be unnoticed. Because you don't want the animal out there to be afraid. You want the animal to be unaware, right? Not alert. Not aware that there's something out there lurking, ready to devour you. So Satan, in thinking about his role behind things, and I know sometimes people blame Satan for everything or any problem. The devil made me do it. But there are forces of evil in the New Testament that talk about behind the lies, and that our struggle isn't even against people, flesh and blood, but there's something else out there spiritually that's happening. The dragon is the one, as John in Revelation says, is leading the whole world astray. And he continues to deceive throughout Revelation. He uses a beast that appears from the sea, and the beast comes, and this is what it says about that beast. The whole world was filled with wonder and followed the beast. People worshiped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast. And they also worshiped the beast and asked, who is like this beast? Who can wage war against it? Now that sounds awfully intimidating there. And a lot of times when power comes to power, then there's that manipulation. There's this idea that it's invincible. Who can wage war against it? Who is like the beast? There's no other alternative. It's a reign of terror. And then we're going to listen to more troubling words. Since it's Christmas in October, we'll be a little more troubled because this is terrifying, what is said next. Revelation 3:7. It was given power to wage war against God's holy people and to conquer them. And it was given authority over every tribe, people, language, and nation. Where's hope in that? If the forces of evil, if the dragon, the devil, and this huge crowd, the kings of the earth, have all this power and authority over people to conquer them, where's hope? It sounds like they're on the verge of defeat. And again, since this is Christmas in October, let's hold on to our fear for just a little bit longer. Let's be afraid for just a little bit longer for now. Because I want to talk about one more thing before we get back to this. It's in the section. And that's what is called in Revelation, Babylon the Prostitute. And in Revelation, there's this idea of, there's this Babylon. Babylon was this empire that was out before Rome, and it may be like Rome or other empires. But I think that it's more, when we're talking about Babylon the Prostitute, it's about more than sex. It's about other things. And I think a real key is found in Revelation 18:3. Pay attention to how John writes about Babylon here. and what happens in the adultery. For all the nations have drunk the maddening wine of her adulteries. The kings of the earth committed adultery with her, and the merchants of the earth grew rich from her excessive luxuries. Again, I think this is about more than sex with adultery, but we're talking here about money. So what is power? How does a person get power? Power comes from political power. There's military power and there's economic power. And right here with Babylon, there's this marriage of power. There are these economic entanglements as military and politics and money and economics come through. And there's this really corrupting force within it. Because the last part here is interesting, is that merchants play a role. And again, if you're a merchant, if you sell things, if you're a business person, that's not saying you're bad at all. But this is, the economics plays a role in it. Because these are people, just Babylon grew rich, like Rome grew rich, through exploiting people. There were people who were defeated through the military power, and then there were people who became slaves. There was this economic exploitation of people, this rich enriching that came through that. As we're thinking about it, Christ in Revelation doesn't stand with the rich, the kings of the earth, the rich, the powerful, the oppressors. He stands with the oppressed, people who have been exploited. In our family, Jenny's kind of like our prophet. And one of the things that she's been looking into lately is the economics of where we buy things from. Because there's a lot of cheap products that we can purchase that are really being made by slaves. And so we've been a little bit more aware of this recently and have been wrestling with it. And she's been educating us on all these things and trying to be careful, trying to think about local people and people who are doing things the right way. And maybe that's a little more expensive sometimes, but sometimes that's worth it. So we're just kind of early into those discussions, and Jenny's like her conscience. Sadly, it's not the pastor in the family, okay? So I'm not the hero of the story in any shape of the imagination. But she's been talking to us about this. And a couple of weeks ago, we were in Brown County, and my youngest daughter, Cora, saw a corgi dog that was stuffed. She loves stuffed animals, and she loves corgis. And corgi is one of the few that she does not have. So we were in this store, and we looked at the tag, and it was made in California. I thought, okay, great. So we kind of walked away, and Cora's desire for this stuffed corgi grew. And by the time we were at the next store, she's like, I'm going to use my own money. I want to buy this. And I said, okay, let's check the tag and read it, just to make sure. I thought it was American-made and probably okay, but let's go ahead and look at it. And she said, okay. So we go back to the store, we look at it. The company was America, but then where it was made indicated that probably some people were exploited to make it. So I told Cora, and I let her make the decision, and she said, okay, let's buy it. And we got into the line, and as we stood there, it was a few moments, and she said, no, I can't do it. She put it back, and I said, oh, why'd you decide not to buy it? She said, while we were in line, I just had this vision of this poor slave boy making this. And I don't want to do that. Now that was a proud parenting moment for us. You might be thinking one stuffed corgi is not going to make a difference. And you're right, it probably won't. But part of the hope that we have, you know, and just being aware of these things, and because it's not a system I want to be a part of, exploiting other people. And I think all of us who are followers of Christ do not want to see people exploited or suffer unjustly. Like, it's deeply troubling to us. And as we kind of wrestle with these things and like how to help people who are exploited, how to live, how to follow Jesus, what it looks like for us. Because as we know, stuffed corgi still on the shelf, exploited people are still going to continue to be exploited. That's not going to make a difference. That can be very discouraging to think of what's the difference. The powerful, those who have the power are always going to be able to get away with it. So what's kind of hope is? But remember, we left Revelation when we were really frightened, right? We were really terrified. Evil had all this power. It looked like it had the upper hand for a season. As it seems as though there's never much hope for those who are exploited and powerless. Maybe only a fool's hope. But that can be a pretty powerful hope. Because the scriptures indicate something about this hole, that there's something going on that we can't even see. And that there is hope for those who are powerless and exploited. And that God's going to be on the side of one of them. Jesus' brother James took the role of a prophet when he wrote this in James 5, 4 through 5. He says this, "Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers are crying out against you. The cries the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter." Now in Revelation, again, where we left off, it seemed like the beast and the dragon and the people, the kings of the earth, had all this power and were about ready to slaughter the Lamb and the people of God. It seems like that's happening. And that's why today we're just going to skip to the back of the book. You know what happens in the end? What happens in the end of the book? God wins. The exploited are redeemed. There's redemption. There's hope. And throughout the message here in Revelation, the first part focuses a lot on repentance. Coming to repenting of sin. This is a lot about resisting too. Resisting the allure of Babylon. The charms that Babylon offers. Resisting and not being a part of those anti-Christ kind of systems and work. But in the back it says, the one who was slaughtered wins. It says that Good Friday wasn't the end and the Saturday wasn't the end. It was that Sunday, Easter Sunday, where Jesus came back. And there are these moments that we live in that are in between Good Friday and Easter. But there's so much hope. So we're going to just kind of sum up the end by reading Revelation 17, 14. And it talks about the war and it talks about the results. It says this, "They will wage war against the Lamb, but the Lamb will triumph over them because he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and with him will be his called, chosen, and faithful followers." The Lamb who was slain didn't look like the victor when he was slain. But we say worthy is the one who was slain, because Revelation tells us, and all throughout the New Testament, the Gospel tells us, that not everything is as it seems. When it seems like evil's getting away with it, when it seems that horrible things are happening, we have a God who's working and doing something good in ways that we cannot see. Even when it seems like the dragon has all the power, Revelation gives us hope. We don't have to be afraid. We need to be aware. We don't have to be afraid, because in the end, the dragon doesn't win. We can side with him. Again, and sometimes it may seem that all hope is lost, like it does in times of Revelation and in times of the Gospel, maybe in times in our own life. Just seems like, where's the hope? It may seem like this, but the thing is that we believe. Like sometimes we see the authority of the world or Satan or whatever, it seems like it's his world. But Jesus said, all authority in heaven and earth have been given to him. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it or seem like it, but that's either true or it's false. And I believe it's true. And the hope that we have, even when Mordor or Satan or whatever is attacking and looking pretty powerful, that this is our Father's world. And we can rest in the hope that it's his world, that he has the authority, and that he is strong and loving and good. As we close out today, this closing comes from a conversation with my son Caleb, and he was talking about the two towers from Lord of the Rings. I've already mentioned it, but he was telling me about his favorite scene, and it's towards the end of the movie. And if you don't know the story, there are two little hobbits, Frodo Baggins, who has the ring that they need to destroy, and then his best friend Samwise Gamgee. And it's a time when just things look really dark. These two little weak kind of hobbits are charged with this task of destroying a ring, and they have to get through the forces of evil when they're just so little. How are they going to do it? And Frodo's in a state of despair. And then Sam has this speech, and he says this. "It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing. This shadow, even darkness, must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. Those are the stories that stay with you, that mean something. Even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going because they were holding on to something. And Frodo is still in despair and says, "What are we holding on to, Sam?" And Sam answers that there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. This is our Father's world. Will you pray with me? Heavenly Father, this is your world. You have created it and you sustain it. We are your people, the sheep of your pasture. And yet, in this world, evil exists. And we don't, a lot of times, understand, Lord, why hate is so strong when it mocks the song of peace on earth, Lord. But yet we have that hope that the wrong will fail and the right will prevail. And while we wait on this prayer to be answered, the prayer, Lord, for your kingdom to come and your will to be done on earth as it is in heaven, Lord, we pray, lead us not into temptation, but please deliver us from evil. And in the dark night, when all hope may seem lost, help us to remember that you will win and you will not give up on us. Yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.